Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, you're all very welcome back to the Celtics Old Podcast. I'll be your host, it's Andrew Millen here again, and my guest on the show today will be Not The View's Average Joe Miller. This episode has been sponsored by Goodwood Fuel Depot Drogheda. Thanks very much to Tony for his continued support of both the fanzine and now the podcast. If your business or Celtics Supporters Club would like to sponsor the podcast, please get in contact by emailing us at info@celticfanzine.com, and as always, you can contact us through the website or on our social media channels. Folks, football plays such a big part in our lives, from grassroots to international to the club you follow, whether it's a small club in non-league or a big club in the elite of Europe. But I'd like to pay special tribute to my local team, Drogheda United, as known as the Drogs, on winning the first division. Fair play to you boys, and I know Brendan Baxter and all the boys that travel to see Celtic with me will be very, very happy. Just a pity they can't get into Mother Uses to celebrate. And I'd also like to give a special shout out to all the Rovers boys. Not my favourite team in the world, but Shamrock Rovers. I travel with a lot of the boys over to Glasgow as well, and they've had a great season winning the league and playing AC Milan in the Champions League. So best of luck to the Rovers boys as well. Kills me to say it, but sure, I have to. The Celtic players looked out on their feet last night at full time, after each and every one of them put in a performance they can be proud of. Yes, they made some mistakes, which led to the goals, and yes, the end result was bittersweet after an outstanding first half performance, which had me up on my feet dancing around the sitting room. Young Frimpong, he made me eat my words with his best performance in a Celtic shirt this season. Mo was absolutely outstanding. Diego put in another solid shift, and he's yet to win in a Celtic jersey, but he has performed consistently. Ayeti looked like a different player than the one that was substituted in Pataudry on Sunday, and Scott Bain, well, he saved the penalty. The foul committed by Duffy was outside the box, and in my opinion, it shouldn't have been a penalty. What a first half we witnessed. But it turned out to be a game of two halves, with the French team piling on the pressure in the second half. Sloppy defending again let us down, but we had chances to win the game, and Neil Lennon will have been encouraged by the performance against a really good French team in fine form in their league, where they sit joint top. Before the game, I think we all would have been happy to take a share of the spoils, but at full time, as I said, the result tasted bittersweet. But we move on to Sunday now, and the Scottish Cup semi-final at Hampden. I think maybe we saw the best of Aberdeen last week, and I think we can play much better than we did in Pataudry. But it's a cup tie, and you know yourself, we've been unbeaten for a long time in cups, and anything can happen in a cup game. But we love you, Celtic. We do. Joe Miller, or Average Joe as he is known to many within the Celtic support, has been following Celtic home and away for decades now. He was also part of the original Not The View Celtic fanzine crew. He's an old punk rocker, and as I said, he's missed very little games. He's travelled throughout Scotland and Europe following the boys. Hi, Joe. You're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast. You were our first guest on the show back in May with Alan Thompson. When I think back then, we chatted about the first lockdown and maybe getting back to normality, but we seem to be going backwards now with this COVID-19 pandemic, and we now seem as far away as ever from returning to Celtic Park.
Oh, brutal, mate. Nice to talk to you again, Andrew. Love the intro, old punk rocker. Yeah, that's what I am. Yeah, it's just, God, where do you start with it? It's depressing. When we're going to get back to watching football again, or just any normality, it just seems to be pulling us back in again. I think the only answer is going to be a cure, where that's coming from, and who's going to be the one to make a massive profit out of it, who knows. But yeah, we're all certainly missing the Celtic, and with a European tie last night, you all know where lots of us travel. Europe is a big thing for us, seeing new places, meeting up with friends from the travel from all over. So it was hard going watching it last night as well, because you expect to be there.
Yeah, Joe, and you're like yourself, you're an outgoing person, you love getting out, you know, you love getting to the football, getting to gigs, travelling. It is a pain in the arse. I was in Lille, Joe, when Shane Duffy had a brilliant game for us when it was Ireland against Italy. I think that was Shane's first time coming in, maybe his first start, I'm not 100% sure. We'd had a disaster against Belgium. We had a good start against Sweden, disaster against Belgium, and then we beat Italy in that stadium. So that was the talk yesterday among myself and a few of the boys that I watched Celtic at Ireland with, you know, get like the crack we had in that city. But like crack we've had in so many cities, Joe. And for us, you know, it's, you know, we'd love a win in these cities, but I think in the when we look back, any point away in Europe, especially against quality teams, is a welcome.
Of course it is. And it was one of those ones where we're going into the game, as we all know, our form was poor, not playing well at all, and Leo were a great team and firing all cylinders domestically. So things weren't looking good. And that first half performance just blew everybody away. And the bit of luck with the, well, okay, he saved the penalty, but it's still luck as well. And you're thinking, well, maybe we're turning a corner here. And then, of course, the second half, we kind of collapsed a bit. And you kind of walk at the end of the game, you're thinking, disappointed, you know. But before that, you would have took that no problem. So it's a turning point, hopefully, for the team. Hopefully for the manager as well, and hopefully for the fans. But just going back to not being able to travel to the game, it's not even European, even domestically, not even being able to go to Celtic Park or use guys coming over and meeting up in the pub, and everything about it is just kind of, you think about that, well, I'd certainly do after every game, you know. It's just like, you know, after last night, as I said, I felt disappointed and all that, but you'd have been back in a boozer discussing it with everybody that you met up, the usual suspects, yourself and all that. And we'd have had a great time just talking football in another time.
Yeah, we sure would, Joe. And we've had we've been lucky enough to meet up in some wonderful cities and have some great conversations. And if I'm honest, like, you know, the walk or the underground train or bus we were getting from the stadium to wherever we were meeting up, you know, was generally disheartening. Like, you know, we'd generally be beaten. And then we'd get to the pub and, you know, we'd have a moan, we'd devout, and then we'd just enjoy the night.
Yeah. And you do that even domestically, you know. If you're playing Ross County at home, you know, and you win, but maybe not play particularly well, the whole thing going back and meeting your mates and having the conversation about it and disagreeing and then some fine music and good chat is, it's good for the soul, it's good for the mind, and God, we've lost all that, and people are struggling, you know. I certainly feel it, and I know everybody else must, you know, but you know, we need to get on with it and we need to try and get through it and come out the other end.
Well, we certainly do, Joe. And little did I know when I was naming the fans in more than 90 minutes that it would be more than 90 days, more than 90 months. Who knows? Like, you know, Joe, who bloody knows? But yeah, it certainly is more than 90 minutes, Joe, when you think of when we do go back to the pub or even pre-match or travelling to games or, you know, checking social media to see who's checked into a pub, maybe because you want to avoid them, maybe because you want to meet them for a few.
Your secrets, yeah.
But Joe, back to last night, it certainly was a game of two halves. You touched on it there. Outstanding first half, you know, Mo, Scott Bain, Yeti, and the new boy, Diego. You know, they were the talking points at half-time. When I was talking to the dog, because I'm not allowed to talk to As you said, you know, Lille, unfarmed, no mugs, joined top of the French league. They came out strong, and I did expect them to come out strong in the second half, and they got the rewards. We played very deep, but that can be expected as well. But by the end of the game, Joe, the Celtic players looked out on their feet. They were bollocksed. Now, I know if there was a section of us in that stadium last night, you know, 1,000 maybe, or whatever the allocation we got, you know, we certainly would have gave the players, you know, we would have certainly gave them some vocal support that maybe might have carried them over them last, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes when we actually broke against the run of play a couple of times, Joe, and we had a couple of chances. And I was just listening this morning to Ellen News, you know, after the game. I thought it was great. He was disappointed with his second half performance. He didn't really want to talk about his goals and the two wonderful goals and a Yeti. You know, he almost has a non-event against Aberdeen, and he comes out and he's looking for the ball. He's involved in the goals. For me, Joe, I take so many positives from last night.
Of course, you have to, because you need to look at our form so far this season and how we've been playing. We've had flashes of it. Look, Callum McGregor's goal up at Aberdeen was a great move, great wee touch, great goal. That's the way we expect us to play. We'd be fast and moving it quick. And we're only getting flashes of that. And then, but last night, I thought, first half especially, or well, we all know that, was we were more controlled. There was, okay, they got the penalty, which I don't think was one anyway. We get the save, we get good performances. And then, as you say, on the second half, we're expected to be on the back foot because they need to get back in the game. They pushed us. We had chances. And as you say, Elanusi did say, I noticed that as well in his interview, he said about it. But this has kind of been our problem this season, is choices when we're in positions, be it defensively, midfield, and especially attack. We're just not doing the killer pass or taking the shot or taking the man on. There just seems to be that lack of confidence in it, and it's happened all season. But that it's early in the season. That should come good. We've got players coming back. Lee Griffiths is back. Great goal up at Aberdeen. Tom Rodgick setting up the goals. He's fast feet. So getting an Edward as well, obviously coming back to fitness. So it's getting the squad back, getting them all playing regular again with each other. Because we've just been dipping in and out with different formations, different players. And Big Ayer gets injured. So there's the bad luck coming in. Now, would we play now? Beat on with Duffy, and then that's a new partnership playing again. So we don't seem to have this consistency of to pick from a squad and play a regular formation and players. And a lot of people are very critical of a lot of the players, and I don't mind criticism if it's set in a proper manner, but just verbally abusing players is ridiculous with no kind of content behind it. And I just feel we need a settled side to play a good wad of games. Tinker with it a wee bit, yeah, but we need a starting 11 and play it. And we will come good because the players have got the skill.
Yeah, it's funny, Joe, you say that you don't mind players being criticised. As long as it's, I suppose, constructive. But, yeah. You know, last night, Shane Duffy's been getting a hard time from a section of the fans. And I've seen Shane Duffy play for Ireland. And I know Shane Duffy is a good player. You know, you don't play in the Premier League in England if you're not a good player. You know, and he's had a nightmare in some of the games. But some of the comments, you know, unjust and uncalled for. And the other one, like, you know, Christie makes a big mistake last night, but Ryan Christie won't be criticised because there seems to be this, you know, where we can criticise these players, but we can't criticise these players. I'm sure Ryan Christie, you know, when he looks back at that, he'll be raging with himself. He won't need anyone to tell him. You know, maybe if he was on the post instead of where he was, but who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows? But there is the criticism. But I noticed, Joe, there wasn't so many last night shouting and bawling on social media, because I haven't come off it, Joe, but I kind of just said, you know what, after games now, I'm going to just switch off, because I much prefer the conversation in the pub with the lads, you know. And what I've done is I've gone on to some of the WhatsApp groups instead, where it's basically your mates, you know. And I find that a little healthier. and then maybe watch, switch it off completely and watch a bit of TV, because, and then pick it up the next morning, and then maybe you've time to reflect on it, you know, and maybe see it in a different light. Because you know yourself, you know, when you've had a bad result or a player's a bad performance, and you go to the pub, he does get it in the year maybe, but then the next day you might be thinking, Jesus, you know, I watched the game back and maybe he wasn't as bad as I thought, or maybe, you know, there was another player that was at fault, maybe I'd lost the ball before. It's all if buts and maybes, Joe.
So social media as well, I agree with you on that. It's not a place to have a long conversation about things, and you're limited to what you can kind of put on, like Twitter or whatever. I like just to put on a thing. I don't like to get into big discussions about things. It's not the place for it, I don't think. As I said, I'd rather talk to someone face-to-face and or whatever and talk kind of how we feel. But Twitter just seems to be a bit of a shouting match, and just people just venting anger or try to get hits or whatever, you know. So
we're all entitled to change your opinion, but some of the guys on Twitter changed theirs nearly overnight. No, but just looking forward to the semi-final now. You know, another cup semi-final to look forward to. Again, it's a day out in Hampden. Not the greatest ground in the world, but it's been rewarding to us over the last couple of seasons. It's been a great place for us. You know, how do you see the game going? Last night's first half performance. Hopefully it's an indicator of how we're going to play and push to get into another final. And, you know, that quadruple treble, which is still there to be won.
That's us domestically, cup-wise, 30-odd games unbeaten. I think it's about 34, I think. Some records. And it's a good big pitch. And I think it should suit us better than playing, obviously, at Pittodrie. But the concern I've got is always with Hampden is the game on the Saturday, the Edinburgh Derby, and how it's going to cut up, because it's the weather's not been great here in Glasgow. It's been pissing down constantly. Hampden does what it does, you know. Sometimes it can be a plough field. So that's a bit of a worry how the pitch's condition's going to be, because we can play good football and after the first half. Last night, that's the kind of football we want to kind of see and we're capable of doing. So we're hoping, well, I think we're all hoping that can carry on, and we should beat Aberdeen, we should, but nothing is ever granted. We don't. I hate this kind of entitlement that people think we're going to part and we could beat anybody, but anybody could beat us. That's what football's about. But we should be okay for Sunday, I think. And if need be, you bring on Tom Rogic just to create that sound that Hampden gets when he scores a goal, even though it'd be empty.
Yeah, Joe, when you think back to that day, it's a good celebration that night.
Oh, God, man. It's just, again, those moments that you just take for granted, being at a match and falling all over the people you stand with and there's total strangers that are beside you. And it's a feeling that... God, you never thought that back in the start of this year that you would never be able to do that, cuddle a total stranger at a goal. You know, it's basically little things like that that's totally missing in your life. You know,
can't even cuddle your mates now.
I know. You're limited to the wife and the dog.
And that's it, yeah. And like sometimes I think, especially when I'm watching games now on the TV, I think the dog disappears now. He was watching them at the start with me, and Sandra definitely won't watch them with me because she said of my bad language and my attitude.
I know. Well, I must admit, Andrew, I'm not good at watching football on TV. I don't usually watch any other games. There's two teams I watch, and that's Celtic and St. Pauli. St. Pauli I watch a lot on kind of streams and all that, and we have a chat group while we're watching it, so that's kind of good, but watching Celtic on TV, I'm absolute murder. I don't say anything. I just sit and kind of stunned going, why am I not at this game? That runs through my head, and I'm not a good TV watcher. The TV football is the camera follows the ball, so you don't see what's happening anywhere else on the game, how a player's positioning himself, how others are trying to influence other players or whatever. So I miss all that as well, obviously, as much as all my mates and everything that goes around a match day.
Yeah, well, Joe, and I don't want to say you're old, but the vintage you are now, and you know, you're a home and away man. some people can count the games of football they were at. You can count the games of football on your hand that you've watched on TV. Because, you know, I'd like to think I travel a lot, but certainly nearly everywhere I go, I meet Joe Miller.
Oh, it's a poor show for you, isn't it? I'm lucky that I can go to these games, Andrew. I've never taken that for granted either. It's been one thing I've been very, very lucky about is going to games, and actually nowadays still been, well, before lockdown, obviously, is getting tickets for games. It's still a struggle to get tickets. It's not always automatic. And it's this Saturday or Sunday morning and you're up early at stupid o'clock to go to Aberdeen or Dingwall or wherever it's going to be. And God, I've never once thought, can't be annoyed with us today. I've always found it amazing that I can do it.
Yeah, Joe, and I could kind of hear in your voice, and I'm surprised with you because you're normally really upbeat and springing a step. And it obviously is the whole COVID thing is obviously getting you down a bit and not being able to go to games. So, Joe, I want you to take the listeners back to Glasgow. Joe Miller growing up and starting to follow Celtic, and then the story behind when you became average Joe Miller when not a few fanzine came out. And at that time, Joe, there was an explosion of football fanzines. All clubs had them. You know, this was long before social media or websites. And fanzines were the only thing that offered an alternative outlook from the mainstream media and the Celtic view. I got involved in fanzines in 1989, and I was kind of always fascinated from maybe the mid-80s when, you know, we started to see music fanzines and then the influx of football fanzines. And they've always played a huge part in my matchday experience, you know, like buying a fanzine. Or even back in the day, you used to be able to pick them up at gigs and that. So, you know, just take us back, Joe, to, you know, those early years, the formative years for the Celtic, and you know, maybe give us an insight into how Not the View started and the reaction and that from
it. Yeah, we were going through a really tough time. Celtic, end of the season, we could be at home last game of the season. The board weren't taking us anywhere. Everything just seemed to be going downhill. Players not playing well, all went away. Like-minded guys all kind of got together. It was Jerry and George of the Jungle. They got together, put a fanzine out. I seen it, got in touch with them, met up. We all drank the horseshoe and didn't know each other at the time and like-minded. But it was difficult times even then because selling it at games, home and away, you get people shouting and bawling at you and saying you're not real Celtic fans and we're telling lies. But the plus side was, for maybe when you get saying that to you, you get another maybe four or five saying, great stuff, guys. This is what I'm thinking. Exactly how most of the fans were thinking was, where are we going? Where's this board taking us? It was dark days. And at the time, I think we didn't think too much about it and what we were doing and we didn't really have an agenda or anything. We just wanted something done. We knew something had to be done. And it was done in a kind of punk, private eye kind of style. Made it really streetwise. Absolutely ripped the Huns and the media as much as we could. Had a lot of laughs in it. Embarrassed the Hoops and things like that. So it was just done like us talking in a bar to each other and just putting it down in paper. And Jerry Dunbar's a genius for stuff like that, you know. So it was just great. And we had a great collection of folk that didn't all think together or came from the same kind of punk background or thought the same way. In it, there was guys who were just non-political. There was other people like myself and who were very political. And but we kept Not the View as a fanzine, a Celtic fanzine, and that's the way we've done it. And the reaction was great, and it just took off. We got called the malcontents by the board, and we weren't welcome at all. There was just loads of things going on, and it was great to be part of it. But we didn't realise at the time, well, as I said, that it was coming to a cult thing, and we played our part in Celtic's history, and it was great. And it was great to, I see your background's got the paradise, and we were doing that with the old ground, and I saw the shit talk about going to Cameras Lang, and oh, it was just, that old board were criminal, absolutely criminal.
Yeah, the Cabas fang. Huh? I remember Henry, who's involved in the fanzine since we started More Than 90 Minutes. I remember Henry taking me down and showing me one day. He says, that's where he wanted to build the ground, you know. It would have been handy for him because he lived in Eastfield, you know. But I think, even these talks, Joe, you know, like to think that, you know, anyone would want to take Celtic from the spiritual home. Like, it's like for younger fans, it's like, they must be going, what? You know, this is unthinkable. Like, you know, it's, you know, this is like, and this was before, we'll say, you know, modern football. Now, like, you know, like, people don't think in the blink of an eyelid to change the name of a ground or to relocate it. Like, you know, like when you think, I suppose if you look at Scotland, you know, Meadowbank, Thistle to Livingston was probably one. But then, and you look at, you know, Wimbledon to Milton Keynes, you know.
And you look at across the city as well, there's that new team playing out where Rangers used to play.
Yeah, so
The stadium's been kind of kept and used. So that's not so bad, I suppose, that a football stadium's still been kept. But even on the Cambus Lang thing, Andrew's let we weren't on, like, the social media and the click of a button on a mobile phone, we didn't have them then, was we rubbished the Cambus Lang thing within days, and that was just kind of basically looking into it. It was just so typical of the board at the time that they were just ploughing out any old rubbish to try and save themselves. And these guys were in control, or lost control of Celtic. It was so dark days for the series stuff like that. And obviously, that was off the park, but even on the park, Celtic were terrible at the time. We had the Hampden years when we got the park redeveloped. Again, an absolutely atrocious year. And I'm not being a kind of Celtic da about it or anything, but if some of the young guys in the young team who have been brought up with success and through the 10 years that we've got just now and winning everything domestically, is Christ, if they had that half a season at Hampden, we put a full season in, they wouldn't recognise what Celtic was about. It was just so dim and dark days.
Previous to fanzine, Joe, and take us back to, you know, Glasgow, a young lad, you know, Celtic's your team, starting to go to see Celtic, and then starting to listen to music and, you know, in particular, you know, punk music, and it all kind of leads you towards that DIY fanzine culture, that the attitude of punk rock in football.
Yeah, it's Glasgow, as everybody knows, it's changed dramatically. It's back then, early 70s, it was no mean city, as the book was, no mean city. It was, even at the city centre, it was dangerous, very dangerous. Going in, especially when the punk scene happened, it was great because there was a lot of people hanging out down at the bandstand at the Clydeside, outside record stores, etc. So that kind of changed a bit for us. But there was a lot of still gang warfare in the city centre. It was a place you went in during the day and didn't really kick about at night. There was obviously we thought the bar restrictions were bad back then, but Christ, they're shut now. But back then, the licence laws were totally different. Like Sunday, there was very few pubs open, even into Glasgow, and it was totally deserted. So all that kind of, that was a picture of Glasgow back then, and punk was a great release for a lot of people. It certainly was for me, and I grew up with all the kind of glam rock from my older sisters and stuff like that, and I loved all that. And then the punk thing, do-it-yourself, and just opened up a lot of avenues for people, and getting to see bands play live. And now bands play all the time. People think nothing of just going, buying a ticket and going to see a band. But back then, it was a major thing to organise a gig and get people to go. So that kind of DIY was fantastic. And that certainly got took into the Not The View. And as I said, that kind of kicked on. And Glasgow then, as I said, was a dangerous place, not just for going in for music or football. You know, I went to the games and my scarf was tucked in my pocket as I left the house, basically, until I got to the ground. And then, same again on the way back. My parents told me to put my scarf, don't wear your colours. And yeah, if you certainly wore your colours walking about Glasgow City Centre back then, there's a good chance you would have got a kicking, a slashing, something. As I say, the City Centre was dangerous. But there was a cracking kind of, for gigs, for me, was getting into the City Centre. There was a cracking buzz about it, but the football was certainly dangerous then. Glasgow City Centre now is, it's green and white, you know, it's like all these Celtic bars and stuff. I've said to younger guys and even guys of my own age, I'm like, do you remember this place, man, back then? And it's unbelievable that you can have a Celtic bar in the City Centre. You know, that was just unthinkable back then, you know. That's all changed dramatically. The gig scene is superb in Glasgow, has been for many years now. Put on some myself, and it's all DIY thing. It's a great buzz, and I'm certainly missing it.
I would imagine that you're of the same age of one of my older brothers, David, and he was kind of the one that brought punk into our house. I was lucky; I had three older brothers. There was kind of the oldest would have been kind of the, you know, the boot boy bands, and then, you know, Slade and a bit of the glam rock. Then he brought the punk rock in. And then another brother, Eamon, he would have brought in mod music. And both David and Eamon with the mod and the punk thing would have brought Scar in, which was kind of, I kind of fell in love as a young kid. Didn't know what the Specials were singing about when they sang Too Much Too Young. But I just loved the energy. And I watched the video of just, you know, all the skinheads jumping up on stage and the Rude Boys. I went, oh, I want to be there. You know, I want one of them little boys. And, you know, it got me into music. And I suppose music, in Glasgow, I suppose, the one that sticks out maybe is, the Scottish band is the Skids. Over here, the big ones were Stiff Little Fingers and the Undertones. But that music, you know, I suppose, you know, I think someone wrote a big punk football. But that music, you know, and that attitude, it certainly would form my politics in later years. And I would become a teenager, you know, and those bands like the Redskins and the Housemans and stuff like that. And then even around then, Joe, when I suppose the late 80s, when I was coming, you know, into it, teens, and I went to Glasgow for the first time, and I didn't know a lot about Celtic. You know, I knew they won the Urban Cup, and, you know, you used to get annuals when you were a kid, and there'd be pictures of Danny McGrain and, you know, Cain Dalglish maybe in the strips and that. But for me, it wasn't like I didn't really, you know the history of the club or that. So for me, really, it was the tricolour over the stadium, the Irish connection, the couple of Irish players that was at the club that were playing for internationally for Ireland. And then, you know, each year that passed, you know, you learned a little more. Back then it was videos. You watched the video or you read a book and that. So the whole thing, as I said, when the fanzines came out, Joe, you know, Not the View was certainly would have influenced me. And I had a brother that Eamon lived in London, and he was travelling up and down for games. And he would then get the fanzines and the programme that would be posted to me. So, like, that was kind of... I knew when I was younger, I kind of was not seeing a Glasgow girl, but friendly with a Glasgow girl. And her father would give me the Celtic View. So they kind of formed. When I look back now, you don't realise at the time, but Celtic and music is forming it's forming your life. Little did I know that it's, you know, back then I would spend half my life in Glasgow and people like yourself and that. So certainly has, and I suppose from that point of view, and, you know, I'd like to thank you and Jerry and that for what you have given the support, because it was long before the new the modern forms of media and smartphones, and it's brilliant that Not the View has stayed the course of time. But how this season going to fare out, Joe? Because obviously no match day sales.
Jerry put out a special edition just a few months back. Don't really know where we're going just now with it. It's quite difficult times. We're not really chatting much. As I say, the last time we sat and had a beer and watched the European Cup final. That was the last time we had a sit down together. But basically, we were just catching up with loads of things then. It was in McCool's as well. Had a young footballer with us that night. Might have heard of him. Played with Celtic in Ireland, Aidan McGeady. He sat with us for a bit, yeah. His dad was with us, and then he popped in later. So,
brilliant!
It was good having a chat with him.
Aidan put up with some shite, so he did over the years for declaring for Ireland, didn't he?
Aye, yeah, I certainly did. Aye, So, but that's typical. If you've got any Irish background here, you do put up a lot of shite and told your plastic paddy or, well, you're told to go back home and all that stuff. So put up with that many a time about where you come from and who your family are. That was a cherry and I haven't really touched base much with it. It was the big one's 60th birthday as well, not that long ago. So his memory probably going even further than it usually does, losing it. So we'll see how it goes. But I kind of like the way you touch on ska and music and stuff like that as well, because I think that is a great kind of how black and white and it's kind of the terraces at the time where there was a lot of racism and stuff like that. And we touched on it a bit. We had a bad episode with Celtic fans and the Matt Bolts incident. It should never be glossed over. It should always be talked about.
Yeah, of course.
It was great political music then, and it was reflected what was happening on the streets. It was great. There is some bands nowadays that are still talking about it, idols or singing about refugees, etc. Your own Mob, Fontaine's DC, great band, talking about a lot of political stuff as well. So there is a lot of political music still out there. Slaves as well, another band that comes to mind. So there is a lot of music out there. It's not underground. It's still there. You can get it.
So, Joe, and of course, the Wakes, who encompass, I suppose, Celtic, you know, and the anti-racism and the anti-Irish in their songs. And it's great to see a band from Glasgow that has a pen in their own stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I spoke to Paul a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, I was asking him just how they're getting on, the guys, and not being able to play because they do a lot of solo stuff as well. And they just can't get anything done, you know. It's difficult. How you meant to get a band together when you're socially distancing, unless you're flat sharing or whatever. So it's very, very difficult for these musicians. I really feel for them. I'm still buying albums and vinyl and trying to help bands with their streams and all that. It's very difficult times. Football seems to be getting a lot of passes, but other industries or entertainments don't seem to be. It's we need to try and find solutions to things, safe solutions to try, as I say, try to get some normality back. It's just so difficult to kind of find that balance. So
sure is, Joe. And just Joe, you're talking, I suppose, we're tipping on politics and football and music. And your other team, St. Pauli. When, where, and why?
Oh, many moons ago. It was through the fanzine. They had a fanzine called Milling Tower Roar, which was out the fan laden. They got in touch with us and the TLA fanzine, and the St. Pauli fan laden guys came over. They went to Belfast as well, but they came over for a Glasgow derby match, and we all housed them up. Everybody took people in and managed to get them all tickets. And great time. We put a party on for them. We got invited over. We played 11-a-side against them. They come back over, played 11-a-side, and played. That friendship has continued till this day. Again, great punk, politics, music, same kind of things we were just discussing there, and that is what they were into, and it kind of matched everything that we were into. St. Pauli just now, last season we had a dire year. We were terrible, the performances were terrible. We've come in this season with a new coach, new young players, playing some great football. And just to let your many listeners know, we've got a Hamburg derby tonight, 5:30. It's on BT, I believe, so a big match. So looking forward to it. We usually scalp them, so here's hoping to put them in their place. And Hamburg is brown and white tonight.
Well, I'll definitely watch that, Joe. Give me the heads up. I'm struggling to watch a full game of football with no fans in the stadium. I seem to be flicking last night I seemed to figure on the four or five games, and by halftime I put a box out on. I just said, you know, it just doesn't, I don't know, there's just something missing, Joe. And even like from, like, I would watch a lot of football. I'd sit down and just watch any football or any boxing or Gaelic, just anything. I just love watching sport, and it just have lost a lot of interest in it. The only one I can probably still watch is boxing, because, you know, I've been around boxing gyms all my life, and some of the best fights I've seen have had no people there, you know. In the amateurs, you don't get onto them, and I've seen some great spars as well in gyms. So I can kind of watch the boxing, but I struggle with, you know, the GAA starting back up here again now, and I don't know, you know, watching empty terraces, you know.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. The football statement from Jock, football without fans, you know, it's, I think he went on to say, he said, it could be the best football game in the world, but if nobody's there to see it, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And that is, I think that is just as much an important statement rather than football without fans. If there's nobody there to see it, it doesn't mean anything. You know, yeah. I see Germany had X amount of people into the grounds, and it was done really well, safety, but I think they're locking that down again because of the COVID rise. So I think the fans are getting locked out again. They're not putting them back in. I'm fairly sure that's happening. So that's a kind of back step again.
I had John Paul Taylor on the podcast a couple of weeks back, and he'd been at the Ross County.
Yeah.
And he just said, look, it's not football as we know it. Okay, but maybe it was a progressive step in getting 300 fans back into the stadium. But we had a Zoom call among a number of supporters clubs over here just to see, you know, when Celtic were looking for, you know, when they were putting a plan in place for if there was a possibility of getting fans back in. And I think basically what the outcome was, like, you know, like, for a club that wants to run buses or trips over, because that's get places on boats and that, you know, it's just not possible to be, basically you'd have people driving in cars maybe, and it just, like, it's not part of the match day experience to go into a ground a few hours before, be allocated the time to get in. For me, I don't know if, you know, if it would kill it for me having to jump through all these hoops, you know, where once we were, you know, we were strolling up to the ground with 5 minutes to go to kick off. Suppose it's a debate and a conversation that we will have again. Right, so doom and gloom. Let's just pack the doom and gloom. like, match day is never a lonely affair. My day, Joe, is I generally walk the dog, listen to a podcast, and that can be anything from politics, current affairs, football or boxing, depending on the mood I'm in. And then I sit down on the sofa, Joe, and I find myself, as I said, shouting at the TV. And anyone that goes to football with me will know that I'm fairly quiet at the football, because I'm watching, as you say, you know, you're not just following the ball, you're watching the whole game. And I'm just fucking losing the run of myself at times, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the same in Glasgow? Because, like, obviously, you know, there's people live close to the stadium, and match day in Glasgow now must be dead.
Oh, it's terrible, Andrew. It's like a couple of weeks back there, when it was announced the pubs were closing and the hospitality industry, it was 6 o'clock on a Friday night was the last call. I went into town with Jack and we had a bite to eat and we booked my cools for the last pint kind of thing. And we stayed to closing time, which was 6 o'clock in the evening. And it was surreal, you know. It's just like, when we're going to get back to, and a lot of people kind of say, oh, pubs and all that, but I go into McCool's like on a regular basis just for a quick pint, a quick chat. Yeah, you meet folks. It's not just about going and drinking bevy, you know. A lot of people you need to put that aside. It's where they go for match days, it's where they go for gigs, it's where they go to meet my mates. It's that whole pub sort of has got tentacles that spread out for what I do in my life. And I find it hard. I've cycled up to Celtic Park a few times, and God, it's bloody depressing. You just, you're like, oh well, that's it. Just get out as much as I can, walking, but you can only do it so much, because it's not enough stimulation for the brain. I looked a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to my mate about this. We had four gigs on 1 week, we had tickets for, and this was 1 week with four gigs and two Celtic games. Now that's 6 nights out of 7 in a week. It was a Celtic game at the weekend and a midweek game that weren't on, obviously. And this was well, but and then we had four to go to that week. So out of that, we had nothing. And that is a big chunk out of your life. It's a big chunk out of your mind, and there's nothing to replace that. So it is quite difficult. I know people go on about mental health and all that, and luckily I'm quite sound in mind and all that, but it's hard. It's very hard, and I know how it affects people, and it can tip people over. And it's, as I say, as you know, Andrew, I'm very outgoing, and that's kind of a regular for me, that kind of going to four gigs a week or three gigs a week, whatever, and taking in the football and then going to the pub as well. So constantly out to constantly nothing is a hard sketch, but I'm kind of sound in mind, I'm happy, and it might not sound it.
You're depressing me.
I know, I'm getting it, but I'm just saying it's that that's what we went from. So
The whole hospitality industry has been wrote off, basically. And a lot of the big, all these big promoters, Joe, and when we talk about gigs and that, you know, they've the tickets sold. They haven't really given the people the money back. You know, these tickets are getting rescheduled and rescheduled, you know, off the gigs are getting rescheduled and rescheduled. I feel sorry for the small promoters, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You run events, you've done gigs the same as myself. But as well as that, the musicians and the DJs, you know, the bar staff, the waitresses, these are the people that are going to... The companies will probably get a few bob to get themselves back up and running, the big companies. But the smaller ones will go by the wayside. And, you know, the independent, you know, promoters, yeah, and bands and what like. So that is a big... That's going to leave a huge void for people. And
yeah, and how to come back from it, I don't know, because it's... There are a lot of places that put in what they were told by the government for safe opening, and I know a few guys in the industry, and they've done really great. There's certain pubs I would go to, and there's certain pubs I wouldn't go to because I just felt that they weren't doing it. But the pubs I drink in regularly were absolutely great. The way they had it all structured and set up, they'd spent a lot of time and a lot of money to be told within a week or a couple of days, right, I should close again. So I think there has to be an adult conversation about this and a structure set up that, and then, as I said, this is the argument. A lot of people just say, oh, can you not go without a pub? It's not about just a pub. It's not just about going and drinking and getting drunk, because it's not, that's not what we're talking about. It's a whole social network that goes with it. So I just feel it's, I feel we're going into a complete lockdown in November. I can't see it changing, but...
we're in one here, Joe, almost, you know, apart from schools are still open, construction is still going, you know, some shops are still open if they're deemed to be essential shops. Yeah, good man, Joe. But Joe, let's just park that, right? Because, you know, I want to bring you back to a happier time, Joe, right? I've just started up my time machine, okay? and I can transport you back to a game or a time volley in Celtic. You know, just take us back there, Joe, before we wrap up.
I'll tell you back. The first one that came to my mind, I don't know why, but was when Celtic won the league 4-2 at Celtic Park. John Doyle got sent off. Everything was looking bleak. It wasn't on TV. It was a midweek game. I think there was a strike or something. So whoever won that game won the league, and Celtic won 4-2. And it was absolutely magical. A game is because there's no really good footage of it that kind of is only kind of registered in people's back of people's mind. But what a feeling. What an absolute feeling. The train from Belgrove going back to Drumchapel was absolutely bouncing. It was just everything you wanted in a football match, and your team supporting and beating your rivals. 10 men won the league. Oh, what a night. What a night. Love the Celtic for that.
And Joe, and the listeners won't be able to see it, but I can see it. And I've just brought a big smile to your doomy, gloomy face.
Aye, and a tear in my eye.
My eyesight's not that good, Joe. And I know I can see you now. Yeah, a little tear there. Joe, I know how much Celtic means to you. I've had I don't really know how we met. It was probably through the fanzines, but I've had the pleasure of chatting to you many times. But I'd really like to thank you for opening up your Celtic soul to yourself and the listeners. And I look forward to the day that we can go back into McCool's for a few points and listen to a few decent tunes, a bit of slagging, some half-decent conversation, which generally deteriorates the more Guinness you drink. And to just to see me old mate as well. I would pop into McCool's and it would be packed. And if it was on an afternoon flight, I would go back down at lunchtime and when Nicky would be opening up and there'd be no one in the pub and we'd have a coffee and we'd discuss the game and that'd be a half an hour before I'd head back for the flight to Dublin. And I just miss those little things, you know, and so many, you know, great pubs in Glasgow that I drink in and they're all different types of pubs with different types of characters. And I'm really, I really miss them. And even yesterday, you know, Sandra said to me, you know, it's such a huge void when you have an outgoing life. You know, in a WhatsApp group, I speak to Hilly and the boys, and like, there's not a day goes by that someone doesn't say, oh, I wish I could go to Glasgow. And you live in Glasgow, like, where we've took it as our adopted second city, you know, for the traveling. And the money that, you know, people spend and to go to see Celtic, and I suppose bring into the Glasgow economy as well, that must be a huge loss to the likes of McCool's and the Brazen Head and the, you know, the pubs in the Gallagate. And you touched as well, Joe, earlier on, just before we finish up, you know, there was no green and white pubs in the city centre. You know, mm-hmm. you had to go to the east end of Glasgow or off to the Goblins. Well, I would anyway, when I was. And then like, I discovered, as I said, in the Cools, I discovered this pub, you know, I suppose on the outskirts of the Barrows. And I couldn't believe that I could go into a pub and after a Celtic game or before a Celtic game and hear my favourite music. You know, this was just, this was the greatest find ever for me, you know, to be able to have everything that I like in the one pub. But now we have all these pubs in the city centre. You know, playing Irish music, and you know, you say Glasgow's green and white, but you know, it certainly is when you think of how far it's moved on.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, back when I was younger, you wouldn't dream of kicking about Glasgow with your colours on, and now it's just some art of course. You see guys kicking about and kids kicking about with green white hoops on. As I say, the kind of happened and started with the theme pubs, you know, the kind of pinnacles and stuff like that, and I remember saying at the time, I didn't mind that. A lot of people going, ah, it's not a real Irish pub or whatever. I'm going, it's going to attract Irish back people with an Irish background as I step into the city. As I said, it kicked on from where we are now. It's you feel, I'm not saying safe, but it's you walk about Glasgow no problem now and you can wear your colours and it's not going to be as it was in the early 70s. It's We've got our foothold. The Irish community are moving into the city centre more. We're seeing more, and you can say it's the Celtic community as well. Yeah, we're not tucked away or hidden away anymore. The flag's flying well.
And I suppose that's you know, you have to give kudos to, you know, the Irish community in Glasgow, who have put up a lot over the years and have come out fighting and have, you know, and I suppose have won in the end.
Of course, we were always kind of put away to Irish. That's the way it was back then, in the early days. And my grandparents and that came over. You went to where the Irish community was. That's the way it was. The Highlanders came down. They stuck together, and where all the Highlanders stuck together out in Brigton way, in fact. So we're branching out, we're doing well. As I said, we're a green and white city.
Well, Joe, as I said, it's been a pleasure, and we leave it here and we leave it with the final words that Glasgow is green and white.
Certainly is, Andrew.
Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million.
You too, Andrew, and I hope to get a pint soon with you, mate.
Oh, please God, please God.
Always nice to talk to Joe. I think he's a little down with the old lockdown and not being able to get to the pub to get the gigs and to get, of course, to see the Celtic home and away. But you know what, Joe? Stick in there, because someday we will get back. This can't go on forever. And I look forward to chatting to you again. And as I said during the interview, we look forward to a few in McCool's. So folks, More Than 90 Minutes, issue 111, will be available early next week on the digital platform. And then it'll go to the printers and it should be out by the end of the week, where we'll send out all the pre-orders and, of course, to all our subscribers. If you would like to pre-order a copy, you can jump onto the website and you can click in, and then we'll have the digital edition on sale, as I said, from early next week. Once again, I can't thank everybody who has contributed to and supported the magazine, sponsors, subscribers, everyone who picks up a copy, because I keep going on about it, but without match day sales and without your support, we would have no print copy during the lockdown. So once again, thank you so much. The new t-shirts, I'm informed, will be with us at the end of next week, so I'll get them all posted out. There's been a great response to the new t-shirt designs, the old fellow and the rude boys there. So listen, thanks very much for everyone who pre-ordered. I think they're going to be with us on the 6th of November and we'll post them out. I'd like to thank all the St. Margaret's boys as well, who got us to do a nice hoodie for them. So if you're CSC and like us to design and get some stuff made off you, give us a shout. Folks, as always, I have to thank my producer, Ron McQuillan, for putting up with me and for moving times of interviews and when I have to get him in. And I thank him for his patience, because he's looking across the room at me now as we socially distance record, and sometimes I think he's fit to kill me. So, folks, this is the little spiel I give. I give it mostly after every podcast, but look, we need your support. And if you'd like to support us, you can visit CelticFanzine.com, where you can become a member, subscribe, buy some of our merchandise or a fanzine, or donate for the price of a pint. And I thank everyone who donated after Kieran Kenny podcast. Much appreciated. You can also download the app. It's free and you'll have access to all the podcasts, articles, daily news, video, info on upcoming events, if we ever have one, the fanzine and our online shop, all at the touch of a button on your phone or tablet. All episodes of the podcast are available on all platforms, so hit the subscribe button and you'll never miss an episode. Thanks again to our episode sponsor, Tony from Goodwood Fuel Depot Drogheda. Much appreciated, Tony. He's not a Celtic man, but he loves our independent spirit, and we thank him very much for that. So, folks, if your business or Celtic Supporters Club like what we're doing with the podcast and would like to become a sponsor, please email us at info@celticfanzine.com, and you can also contact us through the website or message us on social media. And for the listeners, thank you so much for all the comments and for the suggestions for guests. Just off the phone with an old friend there who suggested a few guests that we might be able to line up, and also Joe suggested a few when we finished the interview today. So I think you're going to be happy with the guests we have over the next couple of weeks, if we can just get one or two of them over the line to confirm, because we're trying to go a bit left field as well and get guests that maybe aren't on the mainstream media shows. So folks, we will be back on Tuesday with episode 38 already. We'll have another guest and they'll be opening up the Celtic Soul to us. We'll look back at the Aberdeen semi-final, where hopefully we'll be celebrating getting to another final. It won't be the same not being in Hampden, but sure, look, it is what it is, and we'll be there virtually to support the boys. So, folks, enjoy your weekend. I know we can't go to the pub and we can't do a lot, but listen, try and stay positive, because in the end of this, when we're all back in the terraces and back in the pub together down the road, we look back at this and go, how the fuck did we get through this? Stay tuned, stay safe, and keep the faith.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.